Well, another Tuesday. We're here with X.
You.
Anno, and we're going to do another episode of God, Guns, and Country. Today, we're going to discuss the exciting topic of what is a snowflake? And it's going to be interesting because we're from and deep in the heart of the deserts of New Mexico. Now, do we have snowflakes here? Yes, we do. We're also going to discuss Black Lives Matter, who they are, and what they want. And we're also going to do a little fun quiz. We're going to make it fun, but we're going to make it very informative. X is going to go ahead and start us off in prayer, and we'll continue on from there.
All right. Well, Father, we come to you right now, Lord, and we thank you for just the ability to get together, to talk, to figure things out. We ask for your grace and understanding what these different things are, Lord, and we pray for those who are listening, those who are serving, and we ask, Lord, that you would protect them. And Father, let them enjoy any downtime they can get, whether it's 10 minutes or a day. Father, bless their families as well. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. All right, we're going to start out with a fun quiz.
You know, I never did good with quizzes.
This one pretty much has all the same answers, but people need to know things. You hear a lot of things in the news, and I think the I don't believe in fake news. I believe in super fake news because I think they just create their own stories and they do it for ratings.
Right.
You know, and ratings are money and people want to get paid. So let's start out. Who started the KKK? That's the white supremacist group known as the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, Democratic Party.
Okay. How about up until just recently, what party has always voted no on any civil rights legislation?
That would be the Democratic Party.
Bing, bing. All right. The cities with the highest crime rates, such as Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Baltimore, Atlanta, are governed by whom?
I'm going to say Democratic Party.
Bing, bing, bing. Another one. Who fought the Confederacy? Who fought as the Confederacy? Who were the Confederates who fought, who wanted to keep slavery?
Those would be the Ku Klux Klan, the Democrats.
Democrats, there you go again. What party affiliations were the assassins who actually assassinated American presidents in the past?
That would all be Democrats.
Okay. Cities with the worst educational systems. These are stats from our Department of Education. Cities with the worst educational systems or districts are governed primarily by what party?
Democrats all the way.
Okay. And this is an interesting one. This could go either way because you hear in the media a lot about President Trump. Mm. But we want to clear the air on this. What party affiliation did the President of the United States belong to who built and put illegal immigrants into cages along holding stations on the Texas border? And we're going to give you a bonus point, X, if you can get the president as well.
He was a Democrat, and I believe the answer is Obama.
No.
Yeah, buddy.
Oh, according to CBS, ABC, NBC, blah, 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 and NPR, it was Trump.
Nope. They missed the mark on that one.
You can actually Google it and see the actual tour given by Obama with the people in them. And they call them holding cells. When Trump found out about them, they were called cages. Hmm. But they're built during the Obama administration. What presidential party allowed our soldiers and ambassadors to be killed overseas in our embassy when it could have been prevented? Now we got a bonus. Name the city and country it occurred in.
Benghazi. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton, Democrats, and Benghazi is in, oh man, I just had a brain fart. Help me out here. Or do I not get Libya?
Boom.
Libya. Yeah.
Okay, so the Democrats again, just shows you how much they love our folks overseas. What American president, who was the only American president to say the N-word repeatedly in public during his time in office. And he also, here's a hint, just in case you know X, you might not know this one, but here's a little hint. He had a vice president who fought during his political career prior to being the vice president. He fought for school and busing segregation early on in his political career. What party were they from, and who was the American president?
Party is Democrat. I want to say... that had to be Obama, because the person fighting for segregation and busing was Joe Biden.
Who could be possibly your future president. And early on in his career, in his home state, he fought against integration of students. He fought to segregate them, and even by busing. He took it all back when he had his recent debates, but he is trying to be the president of the United States, so of course he's not going to own up to anything. But you know, if you drink beer all your life, and then you try to say, I don't drink beer, I don't like beer no more, but you've done it all your life, it means you're a beer drinker. It's okay.
All right.
You know, so you know, if you're going to do it, do it. What president and what party has deported more illegal immigrants than any other president and party combined in the history of the United States?
That would be Obama, who is a Democrat.
No.
Yeah, buddy. Even though he, people like to blame Trump, he was actually, I think he was coined the term deporter in chief.
Yes. It became popular to blast the president when Trump took office, but Obama was really, really good at it. He did later change his stance on many issues. When he first ran for president, and you can look all this up. We're not stretching our imaginations on this. We're not smart as cookies in the bin. We look up and research everything we do. He actually had changed his position that marriage was between a man and a woman. And then during his second term, he lit the White House up in rainbow colors and had a parade there. So, you know, you get the term flip-flop. You know, the N-word's a bad thing, but that he can say it.
Right.
You know, and it's hard to forget a terminology when you repeat it. It's hard to put something behind you if you explore it again every couple years. You know, and before we get into any of this, something that really struck a chord with me this week is in with the Black Lives Matter, and then now we got an armed group, and we're going to talk about them next week. We're going to do militias, we're going to do Black Panthers, we're going to do this NCAF armed
NFAC
assault on Stone Mountain, the potential for a race war. That's going to be next week's topic. We might even get Mary back for her input on that. But what I was going to say is, it really got to me that they talked a lot about slavery and reparations and blaming of the white man for slavery. And a gentleman who was a black man put online the picture of a little Japanese girl sitting in a puddle playing with a little boat. And he said that that she owed us for the losses at Pearl Harbor, that she owes us for every life lost, she owes us for reparations, and that she was racist, and that she was a supremacist.
Wow.
And then right below it, he put down there that, you know, that just because they share the same skin color, nationality, or culture, doesn't mean generations afterward are responsible for other people's actions. Everybody's responsible for their own actions.
That's right.
As a police officer, when somebody commits a crime, you arrest the perpetrator. You don't go arrest their family.
Right.
When you're a soldier and you have an enemy in front of you, you're taught to neutralize the enemy. There's nothing in our code book that says, hey, let's go find his family and neutralize his family and hang his kids up. You don't do that. You don't kill the one that is doing the actual action. That's who's responsible for your actions. And it really struck a chord on me about, you know, this poor little Japanese girl sitting in a puddle. She's about 5 years old, and they're blaming her for Pearl Harbor and wanting reparations and money, and, you know, has no idea anything and probably doesn't even get that history in school. But it bothered me, and that's a little, I know we're getting a little heavy now, but let's do something a little lighter. We have the quiz. X, you're perfect on your quiz. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
That's the first one I've ever
heard. There we go. 100%. And we're going to talk about snowflakes with me. X can comment, and then X is going to cover Black Lives Matter. And he's got some sheets, guys, so hold tight. So, snowflakes. We're in New Mexico. We're in the desert. It's going to be 106 on Friday.
Oh, Lord.
But we got snowflakes here. So, other than frozen rain, a snowflake is a term used to describe an overly sensitive person who thinks the world revolves around them. Now, X, what were you saying earlier about, are snowflakes just Democrat?
No, you can have conservative snowflakes, because what ends up happening is they believe that somehow their view is special, and or that they are so special that everyone needs to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Snowflakes, they gasp in horror when they hear an opinion they don't like, and they believe they have a right to be protected from anything unpalatable, things they don't like. So one of the examples is, one of the biggest snowflake-isms is the show Friends. No, I wasn't really a big proponent, or I didn't watch it. You know, my thing isn't the Friends show. But they did a lot of off-color and off, I don't know, off-the-cuff comedy. Now, this is an NBC, whatever channel. Mm-hmm. This isn't really like a Dave Chappelle show or Richard Pryor or Eddie Murphy. Nothing like that. But yet it triggers them by the way they talk about life. Mm-hmm. And they've banned it, and they want it pulled from the libraries. They want the show burnt. They want it forgotten from history completely. The snowflakes is they get triggered by things.
Well, think about Donald Trump when he was elected. There was whole groups of these folks that would gather together and scream at the sky because he was elected. And they weren't small groups of one or two people. These were, you know, 1,000 people.
Yes.
And what did it serve? Because their candidate didn't win. They went in through a fit. You know what I mean? Really?
I got a story on that. You have some. Remember? Do you remember the explorer in Albuquerque? That is, they wanted to tear his statue down.
Yes.
Remember, and the gentleman was shot when they were trying to beat him. Can you tell us about that statue? Was that a white racist man that took over New Mexico?
No, it was actually kind of interesting. Oñate was a conquistador, and he came up down the center of New Mexico, and is pretty much responsible, if you will, for putting all the major colonies in New Mexico. And yes, he did have some very, very brutal tactics with the Native Americans. But one of the things that struck me is, if he didn't affect BLM, Black Lives Matter, why were they so intent on tearing down the statue and causing such a large scene? And keep in mind, that was their goal, because towards the end of those videos that you watch, you'll see them get up there with chains and a pickaxe, you know?
Yes. So, getting back to the snowflakes, anything can trigger them. It's when you grew up as a kid and somebody called you fat or ugly, you pop them in the snout, mm-hmm. problem solved. Today's generation of sensitive university students are often labeled as snowflakes because they receive trigger warnings on books and lectures that might contain upsetting subjects. I recently, as an older man, went back to school. And I went back to school on the West Coast, also known as the Left Coast. And we'd have classes, and they would have warnings for students. And students would change their classes. They would miss lectures because it would trigger them. Now, very thin skin. I don't know if you ever heard the terminology of have a little thicker skin, let things kind of, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me, because they really can't. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a deaf person, nothing, the words will never hurt you, unless someone can sign in your face and you break their fingers, you know. But they would have warnings, they would miss lectures. So the students are huge. Snowflake youngsters, they were horrified at the PC jokes, the un-PC jokes, by the 97 sitcom Friends. When they saw it for the first time, it was released on Netflix. The term was also used when people began complaining about old James Bond films starring Sean Connery.
Wow.
Not having enough coitus with black women. And they wanted to know why he preferred the European
He was in Europe.
Yeah, I know.
What in the... come on, now.
The name comes from a special phrase called special snowflake, meaning somebody who is self-obsessed and fragile, easily offended, or unable to deal with opposing opinions. Mm. It became popular in 2016 when some older generationals scoffed at young people's hysterical reaction to the... Remember when they had the Brexit?
Yes.
Well, they termed their people, when they flipped out over the Brexit, even though it was voted on to leave the European Union, that they were snowflakes. Now, to get to the origin, the real funny part is, I looked on Google, and I looked on some other search engines, and they have scrubbed everything. It goes pretty much, talks about rain and frozen rain. So I went over to Oxford in England and looked it up. Their dictionary says the experts say that snowflake is now used as an insult to describe someone who's overly sensitive. The word, in fact, once had a positive connotation and was used to describe children with unique personality and potential. That's in England. But in America, snowflake first became popular as an insult in the U.S. after the release of the 1996 Brad Pitt film X.
Fight Club.
One of the prominent lines, "You are not special. You are not a beautiful and unique snowflake," clearly struck a chord, and the phrase took off. Hmm. Chuck Palahniuk wrote in a cult book the film was based on, has claimed he invented the term. The author told the Evening Standard, "It does come from Fight Club," adding it resonates even more two decades later. He said, "There is a kind of a new Victorianism. Every generation gets offended by different things. But my friends who teach in high school tell me that their students are very easily offended." America's Merriam-Webster Dictionary reckons snowflake has been used as an insult for nearly 150 years, but with a different meaning.
Yeah, it was actually in the 70s is the last one I remember, and it was a disparaging term for white men or black men who were seen acting white, whatever that is. I don't know how you act white or you act black or you act brown. Look, man, either you are or you aren't. You know.
It was also used as a slang term for what?
Cocaine.
Yep. So be careful when you use the term snowflake. They could have powder on their nose. They could be just a black man trying to act white. Or they could be watching an episode of Friends. Or they might want to go bare knuckles and fight in Fight Club. But before either of those, it was used for a time with a very special political meaning. In Missouri in the early 1860s, a snowflake was a person who was opposed to the abolition of slavery.
Interesting.
The implication of the name being that such people valued white people over black people. Mm. So snowflake has evolved from cocaine to blacks acting as whites to people who didn't want the abolition of slavery. The snowflakes hoped slavery would survive this country's civil war and were contrasted by two other groups. Meanwhile, the use of Generation Snowflake is often traced back to Claire Fox in her book, "I Find That Offensive." Now, they call it now the Generation Snowflake is a put down and used term to current generation of sensitive millennials. Mm. I happen to be married to a lovely woman who borderlines on millennial, not millennial. And she gets triggered by the most silliest things in the entire world. Mm. And I forgot today was over... me using the blower in the front of our yard, blowing away all the branches I cut down from a tree, blowing them into a pile. She said the constant sound aggravated her. And I said, and I could see her visibly getting upset. And she's like, "It was like you were taunting me." I said, "I'm outside and it's 107 degrees. I'm sweating in places God never even created someone to sweat in. And you're worried about being triggered." And that's just, they get over the silliest, you know, but the woman can get into it with somebody and not be triggered, but the silliest things will watch a show, and the little word, you could just see her whole mindset change. And I said, it's just a word.
Right.
It's just
right.
A phase.
Well, you know, and you have to look at this culture, this millennial culture of snowflakes. And that doesn't include every millennial. But, you know, the snowflakes. And what it boils down to is they cannot stand that anyone would dare have an opinion that is not theirs. And if you don't have two opposing opinions, you're never going to find the center. You see that, you were talking in your quiz, you mentioned some of these democratic cities and how, you know, whether it's education or crime, it's just so outlandish. Well, the problem is when you remove, whether you remove Republicans or you remove Democrats, the other side's going to push all the way. So you have to have, in order to have a functioning country, you have to have this constant butting of heads and ideas so that you find the center for us to toe down. Yep. And when you're a millennial and you think your opinion is the only one that matters, there's a problem. Because guess what? The world is full of opinions. Most of them stink, you know?
There's a book that I read probably about 5 years ago, and it's fascinating. And it's put out by an ex-wrestler who was a governor named Jesse Ventura. It was called Democrips and Rebloodlicans. And it talks about both parties being completely ideologically different, yet so similar in their mantras. And like what X was saying, it took a balance of both. But when there's too much of one or too much of the other, you have a tendency to, they tend to kind of vacate from their ideology. They have a tendency to see how far they can go.
Right.
On the thing with snowflakes, aged in their late teens and early 20s, the generation mostly embraced their snowflake ways while they were in university. A lot of them are coming from the universities. Right. Today, many of these universities, they're hostile to free speech. You have people like Milo Yiannopoulos. He's actually a gay conservative male. They've banned him. He's had to hire private police just leave university because it's been so hostile. Ben Shapiro's another one.
Ben Shapiro,
he can't step onto a campus without somebody trying to run over him. And then there's a gentleman I listen to, and he's got a podcast along with us. His name is Jesse D. Peterson. He's a black man. Black man in Los Angeles. Black man. You know, and they chase him away from forums. They ask him, they think, oh, well, we're going to get this outspoken black gentleman, and they're thinking he's going to run the Black Lives Matter, roo, 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 and he gives them a completely different perspective, and they wind up chasing him out of there.
Right.
And with the colleges, another thing you're going to notice a lot of is even in the high schools now, and I'm working on a degree in education, you're going to see designated rooms for safe places. Places they can go to not be triggered, and kids are being excused from class. If something triggers them, they just tell the teacher, I'm triggered. Can I go to my safe place? And they let them go to a special room. I don't know what's in it. I've never been to it. I don't intend to go. I'm assuming it's got fluffy flowers and, you know, Big Bird dolls. And I don't know what's in there, but it seems to anchor them down or something. But you're seeing a lot of that. And when I was a student, when I had a problem and I didn't like something, my dad would tell me, get over it.
Right, right. Well, I mean, and you got to ask yourself, how do they expect these kids, whether they're in high school and or college, who have these safe spaces or who can throw down the red card, you know, stop yelling at me, I'm stressed. How do they expect them to function in the real world? Because bottom line is, dude, I've never had a job where the boss wasn't on your butt least once a week, if not once a day. How do you function inside your home? If you've ever been married, if you have children, if you have bills, you're going to be stressed. You can't throw down the card. You can't go to your safe space. You're still expected to function. And for the brothers and sisters who are in blue or overseas fighting or preparing to fight, you know as well as I do, there is no safe space for you. You're expected to function within this high-stress environment and get over it. So what are we doing to the following generations when we're destroying their ability to deal with this? It's like trying to stop every bully. It's never going to happen, dude.
When you're hostile to free speech, there's no sharing of ideas. There's no cooperation. There's no consideration. There's no
conversation.
They call it capacity building in the collegiate area. They also... With the new generation snowflake, they're leaving the mark on their world, and then they're introducing new things such as trigger warnings and no platforming on speakers whose opinions they may not agree with. So when they have a graduation speaker, like when I graduated, I was the top two in my class, and they said, would you like to give a commencement speech? But we have to go over it, and I typed out a 5-page commencement speech. They cut out about 90% of it. And they said, you have to do it. If you want the honor, you have to do and speak what we tell you to speak. Couldn't do it because I might trigger someone. I might, you know, my platform might not agree with theirs. And then one student union conference, they banned clapping at a meeting.
Oh, yeah.
In case it caused trauma, asking people to wave silent jazz hands instead, which is a sign language term for applause. Last year, we told We were told how a student at Stanford called in sick and spent the whole day crying over the result of the U.S. election victory of Donald Trump.
They got free counseling in some colleges for that, dude.
Well, I can tell you that from personal experience, I was in a very liberal college as a conservative Christian male when Donald Trump won. And I'm paying for a master's degree education for the first 3 days of him winning. I heard nothing from my professors but about the world's going to end, we're getting ready for war, pack your cellars, he's going to go in with the military and cancel Planned Parenthood, we need to start donating, they're going to close the college campuses, all the professors were afraid they were going to be assassinated by military. They increased the security on all the campuses. They had twice as many police officers to stop the military from coming in. They actually had, we had drills. And wow. I said, you know, it's not going to happen. They said, well, he already said he would cut the funding to Planned Parenthood. And I said, well, I have no problem. I don't believe in Planned Parenthood anyway. I don't believe in the abortion. I'm pro-life all the way. So
right.
It didn't bother me. You know, and I'm gonna. I always had I would always trigger people because they're like, "Well, I'm pro-choice." I said, "No, it's pro-life and pro-death. There's not a choice; it's a death. Either you kill or you don't kill."
Right.
I said, "The baby's born or it's not born. It's pro-life and pro-death." And they're like, "Well, no, it's a choice." And I would always say, "Well, you're triggering us. You need to go on a timeout." And I said, "I'm not leaving the class." And I actually had to write a letter one time that I paid for a college education. I deserve to be in class and I deserve to have my voice heard. If she doesn't want to pick on me to speak, I won't speak.
Right.
But if I'm given an open forum to speak, I'm going to speak my mind. If they're triggered, I'm sorry. I can bring them a lollipop, a pacifier, you know, a baby bottle with some milk in it. I don't know what to do.
Well, that's the problem, though, right? I mean, you go to college used to be the place where you would exchange ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at a lot of the men and women who are very successful right now in their industry or their inventing or whatever. They went there. They exchanged ideas. Sometimes they were told they were wrong. Sometimes they were encouraged. Either way, they came out with a better mentality, and they figured out that the world isn't going to coddle them. And again, you know, you look at folks that are working every single day for their life. They understand the world doesn't coddle them, bro. It just doesn't happen. Guess what? COVID shut down the nation. Everyone, whether you're a snowflake or you're a senior, you figured out the bills don't stop coming in.
Yep.
Life sucks. Get over it. Do what you got to do and make things happen.
One of our listeners had asked a question about for us to speak on the white supremacy and the losing of native lands of our native ancestors, our Native American tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted us to speak on how the white man took that. They predominantly vote Democrat when they do vote. So I wanted to throw a little logic.
Right.
These are all historical facts. During the time slavery was still being fought for, the very first Democratic Party president, Andrew Jackson, took office. In 1830, President Jackson signed what's called the Indian Removal Act. The Democratic president, Andrew Jackson, signed the Indian Removal Act in the law. Under the act, the Native American tribes living east of the Mississippi, they were rounded up and marched into camps farther west so the grounds could be taken over by the white man. In 1830s, later on down the line, the U.S. Supreme Court, with all their justices nominated by the Democratic Party, ruled in favor of the Cherokee Indians in a suit against Georgia, ruling that the Cherokee Nation could not be forcibly removed from their homes. Andrew Jackson overruled the Supreme Court decision, and the Cherokee people were rounded up at gunpoint and forced out by the U.S. military. 1 in 4 Cherokee people died during the inhumane journey, which became known as the Trail of Tears. The Democratic Party also adopted the doctrine of man. You heard, it's not taught in normal schools anymore, but it was something called Manifest Destiny. It was a Democratic Party adopted doctrine. The idea that white Americans were divinely entitled to dominate the North American continent. Now, my native brothers and sisters, this is the Democratic Party.
Right.
And and nowadays they come across as, I'm trying not to say anything negative, they're shysters. they're evil incarnate.
Right.
You know, they're father of the devil. Their whole history, they've been against the blacks and their independence. They've been against the Native Americans, who tore them off their lands, killed them, sent them walking with nothing. They died.
Right.
A new anti-slave political party was formed to secure equal rights for black Americans and Native Americans in 1854. And I'm going to ask you, X, for a bonus question. The name of this political party was called the...
Republican Party.
Yep, because its founders wanted to return to the principles of freedom and equality set forth in the governing documents of the Republic. The very first Republican presidential candidate ran on a platform that included only 9 planks, 6 of which were for the black equality and the equal rights for African Americans and Native Americans. That same year, the Democratic platform strongly defended slavery, stating that abolitionist efforts threatened to diminish the happiness of the people. The Democrats won this election. And that was in 1856. I ask you to please look this up.
Right.
What I'm telling you is not a lie. If I'm wrong, you tell me I'm wrong. You send us a message, I'll apologize on air.
Right.
But I'm a student and I'm an expert in research. It's almost unthinkable, but the Democratic assailant was never charged with the attempted murder of a United States Senator on the Senate floor. Founding Republican Party member Senator Charles Sumner gave a speech in the U.S. Senate against slavery. Angered or...
Directed? Triggered?
Triggered by Sumner's message, Democratic House Representative Preston Brooks of South Carolina crossed over the rotunda of the Capitol and in front of the entire Senate, literally clubbed Sumner almost to death with a board. It's almost unthinkable, but the Democratic assailant was never even charged with the attempted murder of the United States Senator on the Senate floor, remarked Glenn, saying that he was
triggered
by Sumner's wanting to abolish slavery. The DNA. This is 1856. You can look this up.
Wow.
1857, the Democratic-controlled Supreme Court approved the dreaded Dred Scott decision. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard the name, but I really don't know.
Which declared that black Americans were not persons.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Okay. Property.
Property, yep.
Yeah, that was
and therefore had no rights. This is the Democratic-controlled Supreme Court that Andrew Jackson put into place. In 1860, the Republican presidential candidate, Abraham Lincoln, right, you heard of him before.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though he's a racist and we should tear down all his statues. In 1860, Republican presidential candidate, Abraham Lincoln, ran on a platform that blasted the Dred Scott decision. That's where they said that blacks weren't people, they were property.
Right.
They opposed the Fugitive Slave Law, and announced that intention to end slavery completely, not over a period of time, completely. Lincoln received only 40% of the popular vote, but won the presidency with 57% of the Electoral College. Now, this is the same Electoral College that the Democrats want to do away with now. They want the popular vote to be just that, which will eliminate any state in the middle of the United States. You have no say anymore. California, Washington, New York will decide who the president is in Chicago or in Illinois every year.
Right.
Or every 4 years.
Which leaves us totally voiceless, and that sets us into a very dangerous precedent, because you're going to have a whole lot of folks that are disenfranchised and feel like we're back under English rule where you have taxation with no representation.
Here's some more knowledge for us here, and we're going to talk about this a little bit here. Lincoln received 40%, but he won the popular vote. The Confederate flag in 1861 was created by what political party?
I'm going to say Democratic.
Mm-hmm. 1866, a Republican-controlled Congress enacted the...
Thursday?
13th Amendment. Okay. To constitutionally ban slavery in the U.S. We're going to get to that, X, and you're going to be going to make up for that one.
Okay. But
the 13th Amendment banned slavery in the United States in 1860. Another group we've heard a lot in the news about, the Ku Klux Klan. That sounds like a group of dingbats. Ku Klux Klan, jeez. Was started by the...
Democratic Party.
To murder...
Republicans. Well, they didn't want Republicans
black and white.
Yeah, they didn't want them in power.
So, the Democratic Party started the Ku Klux Klan specifically not to murder blacks, but Republicans, black or white. Whatever it took to reverse the abolishment of slavery. 1871, Republican State Senator Dr. John Winsmith was shot 7 times by the Klan because he was fighting for the rights of all blacks in his state. Dr. Winsmith survived the shooting and testified before Congress about the attack. This just gives you an idea. Dr. John Winsmith was a man of color. He was of white and Native American origin.
Oh, wow.
So they went after everybody. Ku Klux Klan, they just want the slavery to be back. But these are just some little facts and figures on this. My perspective, and I'm going to turn this over to X here on Black Lives Matter, but my perspective, during the past 200 years, Democrats have simply shifted their actions from overt racism to what I dub as covert racism.
Right.
The tactics that are used to control minorities in America have just changed. They've shifted from actual slavery on the cotton plantations to make sure that blacks remain on the plantation of government assistance,
right,
ever dependent on the Democratic overseers. Republicans, meanwhile, as a general rule, not all the time, but most, have always fought for the rights of self-determination for minorities. Any minority, black, white, Asian,
right,
Native, they tend not to promise that the government will take care of you. Instead, the GOP, if true to its non-progressive roots, has a philosophy that allows people to have the opportunity to take care of themselves, to chart your own course, make your own destiny, to thrive rather than just survive. Democrats today are positioned as the keepers of the flame of liberty, the ferocious fighters in defense of the underdog. But honestly, truly, if you look at the facts that we just talked about, that nothing could be further from the truth. And one of the biggest things that's coming around now, not the KKK, Black Lives Matter. That's all you see. Every post I watch, Netflix, I got an image on there. Hulu, there's another black fist up on there. You know, all lives, you know, you say all lives matter, you're considered racist.
Right, right.
My wife had said it at work. A lady asked her if she was for Black Lives Matter. And she goes, yeah. She goes, black lives, blue lives, all lives. We're Christians. We believe that we are all made in God's image. And nobody really knows. They were talking about white Jesus. Jesus grew up in the Middle East. He's of Hebrew descent. There's no black. There's no white. He's looks
olive.
Like yes. So if there's a white Jesus and there's a black Jesus, we don't know. We can go to heaven and he's Oriental. I don't know. We don't know. We'll find out eventually one day, and I hope you come along with us and listen when X prays. But you'll hear Black Lives Matter. It is. There's so much confusion, what it is, what it's not. I'm turning this over to X. He's done the research. He is going to tell you from their words. These are not his words. They are their words, what their agenda is, who they are, where the money's going to, and your eyes are going to be open to something that you really need to pay attention to and be diligent. You think about this, and X will tell you, to pray on it, think on it.
Right.
You know, don't just make a rash decision. Don't be triggered by anything we've said. Look it up and research it. We want to just offer you, you know, we want to offer you the communion. It's up to you whether you accept Christ and take communion or not. Same thing with the information. You know, you have to make that decision on what you do with the information we give you. But X, I know you've been chomping at the bit. He's ruffled his papers 10 times. Black Lives Matter, it's all yours, brother.
It's Black Lives Matter. And I'm just going to throw this out there because I've been questioned on this. They'll say, well, you know what? You can't hold people for, you know, the actions of their great-grandfathers back in the first sets of the Democratic Party, which I'm cool with. I'm cool with it. You want to play? Let's do that. But you can look at the DNC right now, the Democratic National Committee, and look at their heavy involvement within Black Lives Matter, and you'll see the same thing. You'll see exactly the same thing, the control, the desire to keep people, if, like you said earlier, on the plantation.
So whoever gives them the money is who they're loyal to.
Exactly. And I can tell you this right now, in doing some research, there's a shell of an organization called Act Blue. So every time money gets to Black Lives Matter, 90% of that ends up in the Democratic National Party.
Wow.
90%. And that's huge when you think about it. But all this other information I'm giving you straight from their site, BLM.com, right? Very simple to find. You're not going to have to dig very far. But when you go to their About section, it says, Black Lives Matter was founded in 2013 in response to the acquittal, listen to that word, the acquittal of Trayvon Martin's murderer. Now, if you'll remember, the man who shot Trayvon Martin was not white, was he?
No.
So how this triggered into what it is, I just don't gather it, right? Plus, he was acquitted. And he was acquitted because in a court of law,
yeah,
whether you like it or not, in a court of law, you are judged on your evidence. So he was acquitted for that crime.
What was interesting is, wasn't he Hispanic?
Yes, the shooter was Hispanic.
And he was acquitted by a jury of his
peers.
Okay, and it was in, what state was it again?
Florida.
Okay, so Black Lives Matter was founded and upset initially over the Hispanic race.
Yeah.
And what had happened, because he was judged by a group of, and I lived in Florida.
Right.
It's a hugely dominated state, but it's not just Mexican. We get Ecuadorians, Venezuelans, Cubans,
Puerto Ricans.
We get Jamaicans. We got a whole little bit of everybody down there.
Right.
So in a court of his peers, primarily I can assume they were probably a mixture of everybody, but I'm assuming that there was a good chunk that were Hispanic. So you're telling me that because of him being acquitted in a court of law, by a jury of his peers,
mm-hmm,
being Hispanic, Black Lives Matter, to some, it's kind of safe to say that there's not a lot of love between them two cultures, races.
Yeah, well, there's not. I mean,
wow.
And it kind of grew from there. In fact, here's the interesting part. Black Lives Matter Foundation Incorporated is actually a global organization in Britain and Canada as well. Now, I don't really follow why. I don't understand the mindset, but, you know, nonetheless, their page goes on to say their mission is to eradicate white supremacy. Okay, so they were founded after a Hispanic man was acquitted of Trayvon Martin's murder, but their mission is to eradicate white supremacy. So what does that tell you in a nutshell?
It's agenda driven. It's where do you get a Hispanic man being acquitted for a crime against a black youth or black kid? I think he was an adult when he did his thing, but and then they switch it over to the white man. I personally have no idea what they're even thinking, or if they're thinking. It seems like an agenda driven, some kind of thing to garner votes. I have no idea.
Right. Well, let's keep going here. It actually gets better. It says, whose mission is to eradicate white supremacy and build local power to intervene in violence, listen closely, in violence inflicted on black communities by the state, and vigilantes. So they've openly come out with this organization, and they said, we're going to intervene every time that the state visits any kind of violence on a black community.
So when they're saying white supremacy, mm-hmm, are they speaking about white privilege? Is it similar? Because, you know, the thing is I grew up in a very Hispanic white community, and you got to ask yourself, what can I do specifically as a white man that my childhood buddy, whose last name was Garcia, couldn't do? We both could get jobs. We both could serve in the military. We both could get married and buy a home and and work and anything that I could do, he could do, and sometimes he did it better.
Right.
And I have, you know, I have friends that are black, and I have friends that are native, and I've got friends that are Asian, and I don't understand where the supremacy comes from, because I'm a retired vet and I'm poor. So I don't know about privilege. I mean, I walk in to get food stamps and I can't get them. I walk in to get other things. Nobody gives me nothing for free.
Right.
So I don't understand where the supremacy, you know. I mean, historically, Democratic Party. I mean, I just gave you the facts.
Right.
They wanted it white. I did, and here the Black Lives Matter, you said that their donations go where?
To the Democratic Party, 90%.
The people that wanted to enslave them.
Right.
Wow.
And it's really interesting because when I look at this, I get these, I get incensed, bro, because here's what it, when it talks about it, it says they want to stop violence inflicted on black communities by the state and vigilantes. Well, you know what, man? If I were to say I'm going to stop the state from doing something, they're going to arrest me within an hour.
So what is the state doing to them? I mean, black on black crime, we talk about Chicago.
Right.
And these are from the black mayor and the black police chief. And then even in Atlanta, the black mayor talking to the black police chief about the black on black crime, people killing each other.
Right.
In the hundreds every weekend, hundreds, little babies. What was it? Eight-year-old little boy was killed by a Black Lives Matter protester, and the kid was black. You know, and the crime is enormous. You know, and they say it's from systemic racism and the white man keeping them down. Brother, I don't care what color you are. You want to work, work.
Exactly.
If they don't want to hire you because you're black, sue them.
Yep.
You know, if you run anything, sue them. There are so many things out there that will help represent you for free. Sue them. Get your justice. Get your way. Join the military. They don't care whether you're black, white, Chinese, purple. Now, you could be a man that wants to be a woman or a woman that wants to be a man. As long as you can hold a gun and kill somebody in front of you or do the job they tell you to do so you don't get an Article 15, you're good as golden. And I think that's how the United States should run.
Hmm.
Whatever you want to do, as long as you do it within the parameters of the law and it makes you happy, there shouldn't be a law restricting anything. So I don't know what it means by white supremacy. I know you watch television. There's white predominantly in the movies. There's, but you know, I when I see like one of my favorite movies is Bad Boys.
Okay.
Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. They're not white. I love the movies. I don't see them as, oh, that's my favorite black movie. No, that's one of my favorite movies. I like Nacho Libre.
I
love wrestling. It's comedy. It's funny. It's set about the Mexican culture. It's funny. I don't think of it as, oh, that's my favorite Mexican movie.
Right.
I just think of it as, you know, it's one of my favorite movies. I love Adam Sandler comedies. I like, you know, just it's a variety of things. You know, I if it's good acting, I don't care. What was it called? It was Tyler Perry did a thing where he did the
Madea.
No, Madea's funny. Madea's funny. I know he's dressed like a woman, but it is funny. It's damn funny. But he did a The Passion of the Christ live in New Orleans in the streets. I have it on DVD. He had a whole bunch of contemporary singers that are Christian, and it was put on by Tyler Perry, and they did a whole production. They shut down the whole half of the city of Atlanta, and they did this whole production of the Passion of the Christ.
Mm.
And one of my top things, and I don't look at Tyler Perry as a black man. I look at him as a man. I look at Will Smith and Martin Lawrence as a man.
Right.
I look at Halle Berry as a goddess. I mean, as a, just as a woman. She's very attractive, by the way, Halle Berry is. Scarlett Johansson, too. Don't kill me, my wife, please. You already know this. But, you know, I look at them as women. I like a suntan woman. I like a dark woman. I love Latino women. You know, the
so
world.
What you're saying is you just love women.
Just period. You know, it's just there's beauty everywhere, and there's talent within everybody. God created everybody.
Right.
You know, we came from two, Adam and Eve, whether they were black, white, Chinese. They could have been purple for all we have no idea. But the Black Lives Matter, the white supremacy thing, please hit on that just a little more. Talk about some white privilege.
Well, that's the problem. I don't understand.
Because what you're saying, you're triggering me. I knew I'd get somebody to laugh. I had a bait on that one. Sorry.
You know, that's the thing. I don't see white privilege anywhere. I, like you, you know, I don't qualify for anything. You know, if you want something, you got to work for it. You know, and in fact, I'll take it a step further. Because my daughter is of college age, she don't get squat, man. She don't get squat because she doesn't have, you know, certain qualifiers, you know, but...
But in American college, I'll tell you, from someone that's went, we have on campuses, and this is a small, well, not small, but a medium-sized Washington college campus. They had a specific department for DACA, Dream Act people. Mm-hmm. They had one for people of Mexican or Latino descent, and they had one for African American studies in descent. All were given full rides, everything free. Room, board, food, everything. If you got it, you want to go, it's free. Mm. And myself, not so much. And I had to fight and scratch and get scholarships and everything I could.
Same with my daughter.
Exactly. But, you know, so I, when they would throw things during on campus about, oh, well, you're privileged. I'm like, well, privileged for what? I hold my hand out. The only thing I get is air.
Right.
Snow, you know, COVID-19 with Copeland blowing on my hand. I don't know. But I didn't get anything.
You know, they go under what we believe. It's the third paragraph. It's kind of interesting. It says, Black Lives Matter is a call to action in response to state-sanctioned violence. I don't know what state-sanctioned violence is. And we'll look at this current case of Siobhan. He was one man. It wasn't state sanctioned. They didn't go to the Minneapolis mayor, the Minneapolis police, the governor. Nobody pulled in Siobhan that I know of and said, hey, today I'd like you to go out and put your knee on the first black man you see and kill him. I don't see that. And that would be what state sanctioned would be.
Well, see, here's the thing is, what Siobhan did, me and X both agree, wrong. You should never take a life. Period. What was done was wrong. Whether George Floyd was a scumbag, good guy, St. George, whatever you want to call him, nobody deserves to die. Funny part was, X brought this up before, so I'm going to refresh his memory. This guy, Siobhan, this ain't his first rodeo. He was a piece of crap for years.
Right.
And there was a certain Democratic, presidential candidate that keep letting him off the hook. Do you remember her name?
Amy Klobuchar.
Klobuchar, yes. The woman that they had the big nose that ran for president and she kind of dropped out. But she let him off the hook. Another Democrat.
18 times.
18 times. Now, I think if an officer has a couple of these, they need to reevaluate them. If you're at any job, X, have you ever had a job that you could purposely go out of your way, screw up 18 times? And nothing happened to you.
Nope.
Especially if you did something like, oh man, I got high and I took a train and just put it full board and headed towards Cruises. You know, didn't kill anybody, but I ran over a bunch of guys. 18 times. No. The 19th time you kill somebody, finally you go to jail.
No.
I quit at work. You had to watch what you say.
Yes.
You have to watch what you do. Usually anywhere I worked was in Florida. And predominantly, there's a lot of minorities. And I did a big stint with U-Haul. And there's people moving. They have hardly any money, hardly any patience. It's hot as Hades there. Mm. You know, so you have to be very careful with that. And I was under the watchful eye of cameras before cameras were big. You know, making sure that I didn't, you know, I couldn't be, you know, even with the military. You can't not fail to follow a lawful order. Call them Article 15. Right. You are the most strict set of folks in the entire world. Police officers, you have a code, and you have an oath, and you have a union to answer to, and to get away 18 times. I don't know how it happened. I don't know how it occurred, but the lady that was in charge, Amy Klobuchar, she has some take a word from Desi on this. Lucy, she got some splaining to do. Right. Not that I'm trying to imitate Latino, which can't do it, but she got some explaining to do. How do you do it? You know?
Well, you know, you continue reading down that what we believe. And there's a part in here. I'm going to read these to you. And then I want you to comment on them, okay? We are self-reflexive and do work required to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift black trans folks. Especially black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonist violence. So cisgender, of course,
I don't believe in violence to anybody.
Right.
Okay. God said with his son Jesus, turn the other cheek to certain things. Okay. And I am for equal opportunity for every race in culture. What you do in the bedroom does not separate you or make you special from anybody else. When you start doing cisgenders, transgenders, hermaphrodites, any one of them type of peoples, you start saying they should be grouped together with African-American trials and tribulations in the workplace or a woman's lack of pay. That is an insult to both of you.
Right.
Okay? That's a sexual preference. Mm-hmm. What you want to do in the bedroom, you do in the bedroom. You hire a man to do a man's job, the man shows up. You wear a dress, not conducive. I don't even know what a cis is.
A cis means you identify with your normal sex. So in other words, you know, if I have a schlong, I'm a dude. If I don't, I'm a woman, kind of thing.
So you just admitted you're a sissy. All right, that's fine.
Damn straight.
So us sissies, and this is the new God, guns, country, and sissies. Because I identify as a man, I plan on staying a man my whole life. You know, I know when you get married, you get neutered, but really, you do keep them. I don't even know where to start on something like that. All I know is that whatever you do in the bedroom, because when you start identifying, you letting people that are different sexually, you know, there's a difference between a black man can't get a job and someone that either a man or a woman, and you don't know what they are. You call them a man, but they want to be a woman, or, you know.
Right.
Whatever you want to do with your sexuality is your business, because what happens is you're going to open Pandora's box. And you're going to have people that want to have sex with kids,
yes,
underage girls, animals, chickens, water bottles. You don't know what's going on. But they're all going to want a piece of this. And if you let one, you're going to have to let them all. Because if not, you're going to be, cisgender racist to something like that. They'll create another word for it.
Right.
And then there'll be trans lives matter or something, or bestiality lives matter.
Well, but, it'll get there. It'll get there, dude. Because if you follow it down... it says here, again, we dismantle the patriarchal practice that requires mothers to work double shifts so that they can mother in private, even as they participate in public justice work. Now, define for me, as quick as you can, what is a patriarch? What does that mean when someone talks about a patriarch?
A male-dominated...
Okay.
Hierarchy. Matriarchal would be the woman.
Okay.
Patriarchal would be like a fatherly figure.
Okay, so...
We have founding fathers. We don't have founding mothers. We have Mount Rushmore's predominantly men. So they say we come from a patriarchal society. Society was different then.
Right.
Women didn't have the right to vote. Women didn't have the right in the workplace. Things have changed. We have beautiful, intelligent, smart, successful women. We have them in the military. I served with them.
Candace Owens.
Candace Owens. Just wonderful and intelligent. She's a beautiful, black, smart woman.
Right.
And so as far as patriarchal, maybe in the past, but if you look at some of the mayors, like the mayor of Chicago is a woman, mayor of Atlanta is a woman.
Talk about Beetlejuice?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a black woman. The founder of Black Lives Matter is a...
woman.
A lesbian woman.
Huh.
Was a lesbian woman.
All right, so
next one.
Then it goes, we disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. Now think about this.
They don't want Ward Cleaver, they don't want a mother and father in a home.
Right.
They want the father's gone, the mother's on welfare. And do you want to know why? Because you're easier to control. If anybody has ever been a farmer or lived on a farm, when you go to feed your cattle, they don't listen to you at any time in the day. But you break out the hay or you break out the chicken feed, you'd be surprised how fast they run to you and wait to be fed and cared for. You have total control over them. They don't like to, if you continue to feed them and you give them good pasture and you take care of them, they don't leave.
Right.
They're very submissive. It works the same way with people. Mm-hmm. Now, hypothetically speaking... If some millionaire showed up at your door and said, "Hello, Mr. X, I'd like to give you $15,000 a month. You don't have to work. I'm going to give you and your whole family full medical care, brand new vehicles. You'll never have to pay another bill. Maybe your mortgage is $8 a month. I'm going to pay for your phones. I'm going to give you a card you can go out and buy food on.
Dang.
If you have any problem, you get free legal advice. And you get this till the day you die. And when you get your Social Security, you're still going to get